Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Welcome to Vox Novus, the new voice. What are grubology, chubology, and glutenectomy? These are words coined by my guest this week on Vox Novus, Jendai Harris. Jendai Harris is a licensed professional counselor and board-certified health coach who knows what it's like to grapple with body image and eating issues. She blends her own deeply personal stories, peppered with humor, extensive research, practical strategies, and biblical and spiritual insights to deliver a holistic approach to healing mind, body, and spirit. Her website is JendaiHarris.com, and she joins me this week to share her path and books, The Chubby Church Book 1, The Chubby Church Book 2, and Whole and Free Health, your guide to a healthy weight and happier you in body, soul, and spirit. Please join me in welcoming to Vox Novus, Jendai Harris. Welcome, Jendai.
Hello, Victor. Happy to meet you, and hello, everyone joining us today.
Jendai, please share with us your path and how it led to the work and wisdom you share with our world.
Oh, thank you. I will say that it's really a calling. I felt led to this work years ago. I knew I was going to be an author, and I wasn't really sure what I was going to write about. And then I had this divine experience in my room, my bedroom. I was watching T.D. Jakes on the television. And somehow, all of a sudden, I was jumping out of bed, which I don't advocate a TV in your bedroom, by the way. But when I jumped out of bed, I started praising God, and I got this really amazing vision and had a sensation of hearing your call to lift the bondage off the people and establish the kingdom of God. It was a very amazing experience and moment. And I didn't realize that I'm first going to start writing on my own biggest, most grueling area of bondage in my life, which was weight and eating, something I call weight and eating bondage, and gain freedom. Weight and eating bondage is that obsessions with how you look, obsessions with your body image, feeling shame about your body, struggling with food, weight, you know, and eating behaviors, binge eating, overeating, eating the wrong foods.
And you share the analogy of going over a mountain and the plight of the Israelites in the book of Exodus in your book and why you related to Moses. Please tell us.
Yeah, I felt like Moses because I felt so inadequate, flabby, and just not like, why me? Okay. Still, you know, I'm still a work in progress always. So, and I always say I lost like 700 pounds, but that's all my ups and downs over the years. And so for people who struggled, you know, with gaining or losing about 20 pounds or more over the years, or just really, really struggle with that weight area and have had trauma, that's why I felt like Moses, just super inadequate to do my job. When God called Moses, Moses was like, me? I can't even speak. I can't even talk. Like, you know, he felt really nervous about it, but yet he was the right leader of the people to lead them to freedom in the promised land. And while he didn't enter the promised land himself, which was honestly probably a gift to him, letting go, he was able to work with the Israelites to help them get there. And I feel like, our promised land and weight and eating world, which I was able to get to, is really looking at permanent weight release, allowing yourself to really let go from an inner transformation that will produce that body revelation. And we'll talk more about that.
I had a wonderful spiritual teacher who used to share that when all of these great people were called, they would respond in Hebrew with the word hineni, which the literal translation is, I am here. But my teacher said it means more. It means I am ready. And when you receive the call, you were ready.
That's right. And, sometimes we're not ready, but we're willing and we're going to just take it out. I mean, and that's really true in this journey. It's like we may want to lose weight or we may want to get healthier, but we're not necessarily ready. Okay. And you never really are because you're always going to enjoy junk food and problem foods. But if you're willing and you allow this place of surrender, that here I am sensation, you can really work with God and spirit to move a lot of mountains in your life, including this one.
What inspired your books, The Chubby Church, Book One, and The Chubby Church, Book Two?
Just the same. So just that same calling, just feeling inspired to do it and my own journey. And just, wow, like I didn't know, how to walk this out really fully and holistically. A lot of times we approach weight and eating from like a, eat lettuce for breakfast type of thing, or, count your calories or go to get a personal trainer. And all those things are really legitimate and true, and not eating lettuce for breakfast, but you know what I mean? Like you're really legitimately need to look at the science and doing the workouts and things of that nature. However, it wasn't the whole picture. Food predicts 90% of our outcome, for example, and food is the behavior and relationship that really leads us to love. If we're loving ourselves through food and what we eat and loving our organs, right, it's going to help us produce those results. So for Chubby Church, I was really inspired because the church kind of has this sense of like, I'm not drinking, I'm not drugging, I'm not, over sexing or partying, but eating, yeah, let's do it. So gluttony and church picnics and all of that and donuts in the lobby are all very acceptable behaviors. Yet, is it true love? Is it truly walking out spirit? These problem toxic foods that real cultivate disease, lethargy, procrastination. And so it was my hope to offer a real pointed message to people who believe in God and trust God, but yet want to improve their health and see the biblical and kind of Torah-based understanding of health.
And you've also written a version for secular readers entitled Whole and Free Health, Your Guide to a Healthy Weight and a Happier You in Body, Soul, and Spirit. Were you called to write the secular version?
Mainly because of my therapy practice, I would attract people who are non-believers or didn't resonate with the church messages or audience, or who had church hurt. They went to church, they had a bad experience, and that affected their walk in that way. So they didn't quite resonate with that audience. So the Whole and Free Health is more general audience. It still has a lot of love, a lot of wisdom from biblical truth, but it also allows for people who, want that information and insight to handle this area of their life and get some freedom, but not with all of the other context. So Whole and Free Health includes Looksology, which is from Chubby Church 2, but it's mostly based on Chubby Church 1, and is a secular version for people who just want whole and free health, want to get their health in order from a holistic perspective.
In your book, you share the story that really was the beginning of your transformation, Burger King and the Temptation of Chocolate Chip Cookies. Please tell us what happened.
Well, we all have had that experience where you may have not been able to stop eating something, and that was mine. I had this obsession with chocolate chip cookies from Burger King. Oh my goodness, I would eat them for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I was a slave to the Burger King in every single way. And so I'd go get one on my way to work, on my way during work, and then after work, eating these cookies that I just could not stop. And I was like, what is going on here? And finally, I did get free. I moved to another area, but I realized that underneath the cookie was really a lot of pain. It was also food addiction, the concoction of chocolate, the fat, the flour. I'm very addicted to wheat, so I have to stop eating wheat because it was very addictive for me. Sugar, right? That combination was just intoxicating, was very numbing, would help me kind of disassociate with what was happening in my emotional body or life, that I couldn't handle. So there was a food addiction component and yet an emotional component because underneath the chocolate chip cookies was some devastation. I had my dad was murdered, and prior to that, was some just toxicity and addiction and things like that for him. So when that happened at 12, I started 12 years old when he was murdered, I started to really hone in to my food addiction and bake chocolate chip cookies and things like that. And I would bake these cookie cakes and all of that. So it was a way to help me kind of nurture losing, the first man I ever loved, which is my dad, that sense of protection. And food can become like a like the food can be like a comfort, right? Like from your mother, right? Or that protection, that weight can be like a protection, like a father. So they work hand in hand to nurture those emotional wounds. And that is true emotional eating, is getting that under healing, happening. So yeah, that's my story. And it caused me to have weight woes, most of my life and going up and down, up and down and up and down and really having these battles that I didn't understand how to fix. You try to fix it with food, you try to fix it with exercise, you try to fix it, with surgeries and things of that nature. But at the end of the day, it's a soul issue. It's a soul space and it's growing and healing some of our traumas, our issues, our character, and working things out. And God is using our food and weight story, our health, in order to work out our best self, our best life. So this is an area to look at for spiritual transformation.
As I shared with you before we started the interview, I had experiences like that when I was a kid. Not as dramatic as what you just shared, but I had a grandmother in the I was raised in the 1950s, and I had a grandmother who was in her early 80s when I was a child. And every time I would come to visit her, she'd be wearing an apron, and in the pocket she would have something, and she would smile and give me a hug and a kiss and say, "You know where it is." And in that apron pocket was a chocolate bar. And this started wiring in my young mind this concept of food, especially sweets, that's love. That's an expression of love. And that sort of started my process. And because of certain behavior that I was punished for as a kid, I started gaining weight as a form of armoring, protecting myself from the pain of being punished. And that was something that lasted with me well into my 40s when I made a decision to have a weight loss procedure, and I had surgery, and I lost 200 pounds.
Yeah, and it's really powerful that you had that experience, and I'm glad you took hold of it and got the support that you needed. And that is a necessary thing for some people. But still, what we find, and you've probably found this, is maintaining the loss, even for many people who have bariatric surgery or other types of surgery, gastric bypass and other things. We find that they gain weight back because the soul issue was still under or unaddressed.
And that for me was healed because I recognized after the surgery that I really didn't need the surgery, that the reduction of the amount that I could eat and also the quality of the food that I could eat was something that had I had the mentality, had I had your books way back when, I might not have had to have gone through that process. And to this day, I have not had a regaining of any of the weight, and my eating is moderate and healthy, and it's worked out well for me. And I'm grateful. I'm really grateful for the fact that at 70 years old, I'm still here, because I don't think I would have been had I not gone through that process.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing, Victor.
So that leads us to the question about childhood struggles leading to overeating. Is that for most overeaters the source?
For I would say most, but in today's day and age, there's also there's also like, and I write in my book, so there's a chapter called Chubology. There's another chapter in Chubby, and so in either book, Chubby Church One or Whole and Free Health, you'll get Chubology, which looks at the psychological components of how we use weight. Okay, and one of them is absolutely some of those threats to feeling safe and healthy and energetic in our bodies. And when we've had childhood traumas and other like sexual abuse, you're going to see like especially emotional abuse or emotional neglect, you're going to see some overeating tendencies inside of the child. There's also an us, right? We grow up into these habits where food again can be much more reliable than some of the people in our lives. The food is always there and those junk foods and snacks are at every, other corner that you can get access to this kind of drug of choice to fill those places. So in our Chubology, we have chubological triggers, and definitely we can feel that need to eat and use weight as a self-protection to cover when we do not feel safe in our bodies and the world and our bodies. A lot of women have this experience where they've been sexually assaulted or had some issues, and that's going to cause them to feel like, oh my gosh, I don't know how to deal with the opposite sex, different types of things, or their lust or sexuality. So they tend to pack on the pounds, because of the attention, the unwanted attention. So there's different types of psychological areas like that that need to be addressed for permanent weight release.
I'm curious as to whether in your work and your studies you've ever encountered any scientific studies that show that not only is this an emotional component, but somehow gets programmed into our genes?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a ton of research in epigenetics that looks at certain genes that are definitely kind of supportive to addictive behavior. So addictive food behavior, sugar, wheat, like refined flour. Certain people have a fat addiction. And you know that if you kind of overeat, like French fries or potato chips, things like that. So there is absolute research on epigenetics and certain genograms that are genotypes that are going to show a propensity to severe, food addiction, which is going to lead to usually like obesity, morbid obesity, things of that nature, binge eating behaviors, different eating disorders. And then you ha also have that component of just general, like some people, for example, some of the research done where some people have like a lesser hunger sensation. So like they don't feel hunger or full as much as other people. So if I don't have the like a certain genotype that says, okay, I'm full after I eat, then that's going to be a problem. Other people are really prone to like sweet tooth, or salty tooth. And that's kind of proven as well in genetics and research.
And does that also tie in to those who suffer from alcoholism and drug addiction?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And what about spending addiction, people who go out and have to spend constantly?
Yeah, those are also, but again, in the addictive areas and centers of the brain and the different genes associated with that addictive tendencies overall.
I love the way you create interesting words in your writing. You had mentioned chubology. What's grubology?
Grubology speaks to why we overeat. So it looks at, am I identifying myself and my needs? Many times when you're overeating, you're actually what's called disassociating. You're disconnecting with your soul and yourself. The soul is the your sense of mind, your volition, your choice, your sense of mentality, thinking, intellect. It's also your psyche, psychology, your personality. Your soul is your emotions, your feelings. And when we're overeating, a lot of times, like for example, I would go from zero to food, right? So if there was an emotion, any kind of emotion, I would literally just go to food. I was not thinking and slowing down that process of what am I feeling? What am I needing right now? So we want to begin to learn how to identify our needs. For example, you have needs for leisure. You have needs for affection, physical affection. You have needs for, communication, connection. Sometimes we have needs for leading or control is another actual need in certain spaces. And even though letting go of control is always good, but we sometimes are feeling that sense of out of control that can cause us to overeat. So grubology is going to look at the psychology around why we're overeating and helping you identify what your even needs are. And when you've had emotional neglect, as many overeaters have had, you don't really know, or you feel a shame around your needs. You may not identify with them. And sometimes they're physical needs, sometimes they're emotional needs, but learning to get in touch with those needs, being able to share or request your needs to be met from your partner or others in your life, trusting needs to be met by God, by life. So that's what grubology is all about. It's a really supportive chapter to getting to know yourself. That self-awareness is critical in permanent weight release.
And in your counseling and coaching works, you had mentioned about being willing to advocate for oneself, to ask for what we truly need in this life. A lot of people suffer from that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure you've seen that in your work. It's just so many people, right? We just feel like we just feel like alone in the world, and that's a spiritual kind of thing. And yet we're so connected to everything else around us. And yeah, we do need to advocate for ourselves. We do need to learn how to speak up for ourselves and find our voice in this very, crowded world, because you're just one in 8 billion people, which is pretty remarkable as far as a unique creation of one, but yet so interconnected, and learning how to support and advocate yourself in it.
I had a dear spiritual friend who used to say, in the other world, we get what we need. In this world, you have to ask for what you need.
And it still comes. Sometimes it's that gratitude journey as well, right? Like the gratitude seems to attract more and more of us getting what we need to.
Absolutely. My guest, Jendai Harris, her books are The Chubby Church Book One, The Chubby Church Book Two, and Whole and Free Health, Your Guide to a Healthy Weight and Happier You in Body, Soul, and Spirit. Jendai, please tell our listeners where they can get your books and find out more about you and your wonderful work.
Yeah, thank you. You can just go to www.thechubbychurch.com. The www.thechubbychurch.com.
And we'll be back with more of Jendai after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Dad, I picked up your pills, made your lunch, and your laundry is done.
When you care for a loved one, you take care of everything. But are you taking care of yourself? Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
They are our love bugs and companions. They are our pets, our family, and they make life better. When we face unexpected challenges, so do our pets. That's why we're on a mission to support people and their pets. Whether donating a bag of kibble, sharing an Instagram post of a lost cat, or welcoming a foster pet into your home, every bit of kindness counts. Visit petsandpeopletogether.org to learn how to be a helper in your community. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Back on Vox Nobis, my guest this week is Jendai Harris. We're talking about her books, The Chubby Church Book One, The Chubby Church Book Two, and Whole and Free Health, Your Guide to a Healthy Weight and Happier You in Body, Soul, and Spirit. Jendai, you share that there are three secret reasons that we really don't want to lose weight. What are those secrets?
Well, that goes back to the Chubology, but one of those is that you just want to do what you want to do. I mean, you're human and you like that you get to eat what you want. Okay. So just knowing that we don't always want to let go. That's the nature of food addiction, is we want to, because we see the negative effects that these problem foods may be causing, but then we don't want to because our biochemistry, our emotional chemistry is connected to the foods. Another reason is because that weight is a self-protection. It really is a self-protection against the world and against feeling unsafe. So when we have to deal with our psychology and weight psychology, it can bring up some pain, which is the third reason that we don't want to, is we don't want to deal with the pain. We don't want to deal with the actual inner child within that still needs your love and attention. And that is true emotional eating, is that there, it's really speaking to a place where this inner child in you is needing comfort, understanding, truth versus lies. She or he may believe, they're unappreciated or inadequate, and we got to speak to these places within our soul, those inner child places, and that's going to bring forth real, true healing. And we just want to address it kind of this topical mind point of view, but long-term wholeness and freedom is a path of really looking at all aspects of self.
What is the difference between overeating and unhealthy eating and binge eating? And what is the stimuli for binge eating?
Yeah, binge eating comes from, again, these emotional areas where we just have been, we have overwhelmed. So identifying your emotions as a person is super important, right? Our emotions, our needs, like, what do I feel? What do I need? What do I want? What's going on with me? So that kind of self-awareness is going to be important. But binge eating is stimulated by this emotional side, which has to do with the maybe trauma, maybe inner child stuff, maybe chaotic stuff going on in your life right now that's triggering that. Those deep emotional spaces or things you haven't even been through. And that can trigger, you know, just that binge eating and overeating. Whereas your binges are also stimulated by those addictive food ingredients. And there's a lot of them. Like, it's actually statistically proven and researched that your sugar, for example, is just as powerful as cocaine or heroin in the brain. And so it's like, no, I don't want you to use in cocaine or heroin, of course, but food can do that type of powerful protection of emotional, you know, drama, right? It can really numb you out for a moment and give you an elation feeling or powerful, happy feeling that can get people through. And that's why they rely on it so much. And there's these addictive food ingredients like salt, for example, we 11% more when we have salt, fat, like fried stuff, you know, you may be addicted to like the fried chicken or fried chicken burgers or a lot of junk foods that are fried. We look at ingredients like, you know, wheat, Franken wheat is a high, and cheese are both opioid, direct opioid, centers in the brain, which means that it's going to numb you, make you feel really good for a moment. And those types of addictive ingredients don't work, you know, don't work in all brains that way. But some brains, if you feel like you've struggled and you notice your problem foods have, like the foods you binge on or overeat or tend to crave, those foods usually have an addictive kind of component. So you're going to eat more of them and maybe overeat them or choose the wrong stuff. So binge eating, just so you're clear, is an episode of eating where you eat noticeably more in a short period of time. A binge is a quick process, meaning you eat a lot. Like, it can be, oh, let me just nibble on this peanut butter. Oh, let me have a little bit of chips over here. Let me eat some of these nuts. And then before you know it, you have a noticeably large amount of caloric intake in a short period of time, like within a short period of time. And that's how you know it's a binge. I've seen it as severe as going from restaurant to restaurant, up to 3 or 4 restaurants in one evening to have big, huge dinner meals. Some people have had that. Or in one of my episodes, I talk about where I ate like a whole, like 2 big, huge slices of pizza and a pint of ice cream and, you know, a sticky bun all within a short period of time. And that's how you know it's a binge. Overeating can be somewhat like Thanksgiving, and you do want to have feasts. You know, there's feasts mentioned in many biblical texts. But, you know, you want to, there is times for overeating, but when you're doing that on a consistent basis, like eating to a point of fullness, that's like off the fullness scale of, you know, 1 to 10, you're eating at a level like 11 or 12 on a consistent basis, or just extra full where your pants, your button's about to pop or your stomach feels full. That's going to tell you that that meal, even though it wasn't binge eating behavior, was still just a lot of intake for your physical body and stomach. So those are the differences between like binge eating and overeating, but they can be, of course, overlapping. And when you have multiple issues around binge eating per week, you are looking at a eating disorder psychologically. So there's different eating disorders that could be present. And again, when I say that, it's all healable. It's just a matter of really honing in what are those problem food ingredients, dealing with your emotions, getting psychotherapy, working with a, you know, professional to support you through what your emotional regulation and processing, thinking, inner child work. And it's a pretty powerful combination when you are having a healthy food plan, as well as, you know, getting regular activity and cleansing your organs and things of that nature.
Getting back to biblical reference, I know that in the book of Genesis, there's a reference to eating these types of seeds and grains and things of that nature, which all sound to be very healthy. And then later on, there's regulations about eating different types of meat and so on and so forth. Is there a biblical diet?
Yeah, it's a great question. Genesis 1:29 really does, and through 31, does speak to, you know, we really are, like, the primary instruction around eating was, please, you know, eat lots of seed bearing, you know, fruits and vegetables and lots of greens. Now, greens are all over. They're easy to grow. You know, we have them for access all the time, and your organs love them. Like, your liver is like, kale, come on, give it to me. You know, it loves these types of foods. It loves those bitter herbs and greens. Your taste buds, however, may not. Okay. Your taste buds love the ice cream and the steaks and all of that. But for your body to be healthiest, you need a diet that does include a large amount of fruits and vegetables. And that's kind of your basis for healthy eating in any food plan. So I call it food truth, because no matter what diet plan you use, you will see a need to increase your vegetable and fruit intake. They say actually one of the reasons of the obesity epidemic is a lack of fruits. It's like we have this weird mindset, all this confusion of, oh, I can't seem to eat fruits because they're carbs and or sugar, but yet I binge on, you know, candy bars and, you know, chips. So it's really this kind of strange mindset happening right now when if we just ate the fruit, which has a lot more holistic vitamin, mineral balance, fiber, we're going to actually get more impact in our health overall and in our weight versus, you know, trying to shun the fruit and eat, you know, the junk food binges that we may get on our fast food. So,
eating from the tree of life.
Yeah, eating from the tree of life. That also biblically, when Noah was in the ark and all of that afterwards, God said, okay, you can go ahead and eat whatever, you know, eat meat. but in Leviticus 11, I think Deuteronomy 14, there is a biblical food plan. They call it kosher, meaning fit for consumption. Now, today's world is different when it comes to meat care and all of that animal care. And we do, you know, some people do prefer meat in their diet. Some don't, right? So either way is fine. Now, biblically, it's okay to eat meat. You know, Leviticus tells us, you know, God loved a good steak too, a burnt offering at the time. But I will tell you that today's world, we eat way more than we need. And the type of meat we're eating is pumped with hormones, antibiotics, lots of pharmaceuticals. In fact, the reason why we sell most pharmaceuticals is for the meat, and how the animals are treated is certainly not right. It's not inhumane scripturally. It's inhumane overall. That's why we can't even see where the animals are. We used to go around the corner and see a bunch of cows and dairy cows. Now you really don't see that many animals outside, and there's reasons for that, and that needs to be studied and nurtured, and where your meat is coming from. So you just want to eat the highest quality meat. If you eat meat or fish, highest quality wild type of wild caught fish, like, just do your best for the quality, and then kind of reduce it, because all meat has cholesterol and saturated fat and lots more sodium. So that you want to, if you need to really get your health in order, meat's really the first thing to go. And there's so much research on this for diabetics and heart disease. I mean, it's a really powerful thing for your liver, your organs, to have less fat to digest. And that's how you're going to do it fastest, and cutting out saturated fat. Not that saturated fat is bad, it's just the quantities and quality that we're eating is not the best, especially if you have chronic disease or obesity, things like that. So I do advocate the biblical kind of way of eating is going to be a lot more fruits and vegetables. In fact, there's such abundance. Like, for example, 500 calories is a whole watermelon. I mean, that's huge, versus a donut and a coffee with a lot of cream and sugar. That's going to get you easily, you know, 500-600 calories, right? And it's going to be less satiating. So you're looking for a lot more fiber, those whole grains. Like, instead of white rice, choose brown rice. Instead of just white bread, choose like that whole grain or Ezekiel type of bread. That's going to be sprouted grains, a lot more holistic, a lot more fiber, and much more, you know, nutrients for you. Yeah, I also look at it it in terms of how do I get more nutrition into my system? Because obesity and all chronic diseases is a sign of malnourishment. The fat is storing because it was calories we did not need, a food we did not need or couldn't pronounce in the body. So it stores in the adipose tissue. Now, if you decide to help strengthen your health, you're going to want to go to spiritual truth, which is food made with love and light of the sun and more of it in its raw form. So you're getting that highest nutrient potency. And I recommend to do this, the best thing is to nutrient load. So getting nutrients in the morning, like a huge smoothie sometime before lunch, right? Sometime early in the day, because that's when your most, your will, let's say from the willpower component is highest and strongest. So get that smoothie in, and that looks like 3 to 4 cups of whatever green of choice. I love kale. I love spinach, like whatever green you love. A banana or two for sweetening. You can eat a whole pack of frozen fruit and pop that into a Vitamix or blender and really get that down. You know, some people like a vegan or regular protein powder mix, but that's going to be a wonderful way for your body, your cells, your nutrition to get in there in the morning. And when you have these like greens, it's actually going to prevent you from craving some of the thylakoids inside the greens. So my whole point here is biblically, there's certain meat that is not recommended in God's grocery store. It's just not. It's not there. There's something wrong. For example, the pig, okay, bacon. And there's a huge bacon dilemma because we love bacon in our culture. We love it. But and when it comes to pork, for example, it's one of many areas. Like we don't eat snake for dinner in the United States usually, right? It's not our particular meat of choice. For a reason, right? For not, for many reasons, because they're scavengers. So when you look at the pork or pig, they eat anything. I mean, they'll eat another pig if you allow them to. So they are very much a cannibalistic type of animal, and they don't have discretion. So within the meat, there's different types of parasites and things of that nature that can cause some major problems. And you can actually see it when you're cooking pork chops like I did for my grandparents. So I would just encourage you to start fundamentally in your nutrition, start your day really well, multi whole foods vitamin, a liquid vitamin, starting with some, you know, digestive enzymes, and a huge, huge smoothie, getting that nutrition in, working to reduce some of the meat overall in your diet and just increase your fruits and vegetables. So for a long time, I stopped eating cake and I would eat watermelon instead. And it actually satisfied me a lot more. So that was helpful to transition off of like refined sugars into more complex or real carbohydrate type of helpful sugars for the body. And it actually had a slimming effect because of all that hydration. So I can talk about these nutritional things forever as a holistic health coach, but I will tell you that is your basis for biblical nutrition.
And many faith traditions have periods of fasting. Is fasting healthy for us?
Absolutely. Fasting, I highly recommend periodically to break the stronghold psychologically and physically. Nowadays, you hear a lot about intermittent fasting, which is a real powerful practice. I mean, we used to just not eat after dinner, okay? We used to eat 3 meals a day and call it a day. We didn't have all the snacking, but the food industry has sold us on snacking. It has sold us on how we need more, and we necessarily don't really, okay? But when you just stop eating after dinner and then you eat at breakfast, that's called, you know, nowadays intermittent fasting. So you take breaks from eating between meals and or especially after dinner time. And that is going to help you to balance your blood sugar. And that's why, you know, 20 years ago, we weren't dealing with as much health issues as we are right now. When we look at other areas of fasting, you know, Jesus fasted, you know, he fasted 40 days, 40 nights. He fasted for spiritual breakthrough. And that is another reason to fast. And in Chubby Church Book 2, where I really go into the 7 battles of the weight and eating war, you'll see like fasting, for me, I was a huge game changer in my whole life. God led me, and I do recommend being spirit led. I do not recommend water-based fasting unless you're under clinical supervision. And there are places that do that, but I was led for a 41-day fast, and this fast was juice, water, lots of juice, of course. and fresh juices. And this fast, I was like, it was a very audible voice of fast for the curses of your family and generation. I mean, I was just like, what's a fast and what's a curse? And what is this? I never, ever took a break from food, folks, ever. I mean, never. I never even thought about taking a break from food. But your body physically absolutely loves to have a break from eating. It actually gives you more time back, right? It helps your body start to balance because your body is this incredible divine machine, right? It is a divine cleanser. It always wants, it's made and rooted in love. Therefore, it always wants to cleanse it for the highest good. The problem is we keep putting so much junk in, it doesn't get the space to actually cleanse. So the fasting period is going to allow you to really allow for your body to get back into its highest, best form of energy, get rid of toxins, heal. And there's, the research is profound. There's lots of it in my book. There's other books, of course, that talk about the power of fasting. There's a really good one by Jason Fung, who wrote The Obesity Code and other great books and on the complete guide for fasting. But I will tell you that you're going to reduce usually, high blood pressure. You're going to reduce that A1C for a diabetic, metrics. You're going to, balance out blood sugar. You're going to start to slim down because you're getting, your body's allowed to process the fat. So I highly recommend a juice fast, a smoothie fast without the protein. And I don't recommend, I recommend you hear from God. I recommend you pray and ask God, you know, what is it? How long is should my fast be? And kind of get a sense for how long, what type. There's lots of types of fasting, whether it's, you know, from caffeine or the problem foods, which we recommend obviously eliminating, but just, you know, that can be a start to the elimination. But getting your brain and your body back, you know, I recommend praying about, you know, what else you're trying to break through right now. You know, there's areas of my life right now I'm breaking through in terms of relational health and what's going on, you know, with me. So like you have areas that you want to break through. And for me, I was like, wow, a 41-day fast. This is back in 2004 and five. And it was so powerful what I saw and experienced during that time. And I'm still reaping today. So fasting is a powerful thing. Jesus fasted and other people, he said, you know, you're going to fast in the days to come. Fasting is a spiritual practice. It's also a liberator emotionally from different forms of bondage or situations or breakthroughs. And there's lots of reasons, which I outline in my book, The Chubby Church, too.
The wisdom of Jendai Harris. We'll be back with more after these words on the Olden Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
If I could be you.
And you could be me. For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
back on Vox Novus. My guest this week is Jendai Harris. She's the author of The Chubby Church Book 1, The Chubby Church Book 2, and for secular readers, Whole and Free Health, Your Guide to a Healthy Weight and Happier You in Body, Soul, and Spirit. Jendai, what does weight and eating freedom look like?
Yeah, great question, Victor. Weight and eating freedom looks like no guilt when you eat something you really enjoy. It looks like choosing much healthier for yourself and feeling really good about it, making healthier choices on a consistent basis. It looks like not overdoing exercise or having the mindset of exercise to lose weight and drive the body to thinness. Or even have thinness as a sole motivation for you taking great care of yourself. It looks like exercise would look like more, I'm doing this because I love myself. I'm doing this because I want to feel my best. I want to be in my emotional and mental best state. I want to feel good about my body. Whole and free health looks like loving your only one and only home you never move from, which is your physical body, and having a really positive, encouraging, compassionate relationship with self, since again, you're married to you your whole life, right? And beyond. So it looks like welcoming gratitude, God, spirit, right, into your life and into this area. When you struggle, it's allowing this as a place of surrender and learning and insight and information. It's feeling really good and energetic in your physical space and body, and not having diseased mindsets and thinking and toxic emotions that could bring you down, like bitterness or unforgiveness or a sense of self-hatred or other hatred, and negative emotions that haven't been resolved or dealt with. It's dealing with them and clearing them from your energetic space. And your body does hold on to emotions that you need to breathe and feel to release. So that's what it looks like. It looks like this sense of joy, of happiness, of wholeness. And one reader just yesterday texted or put a message in the for me that she just felt like this was so much more than just health. And this has helped me in every area to become much more emotionally regulated, to be able to know myself better and feel like I'm worthy of health and worthy of good life and worthy of, you know, enjoyment. And I feel like that's what whole and free health is. It's this powerful force to say, I want to be free. I don't want to just lose weight. I want to be whole. I want to be free for my whole life. I want to demonstrate that, build a legacy of it. I want to become it, become love, and allow for love.
And from a spiritual standpoint, these bodies are the homes of our soul.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a scripture in 1 Corinthians 3:16 that says your body is a temple of the living God. It's like, oh, wow, that's big, because that means I bring God wherever I go. That means I bring love. If God is love, I bring love wherever I go. And if I'm not bringing love, perhaps I'm out of divine alignment, you know, and getting ourselves and our physical space in divine alignment. When we're in our truest, when we're in our right form, first of all, we get a lot of joy. The joy, you know, when you're very overweight, you don't feel as much joy simply because you're lugging around a feeling of heaviness, right? It just doesn't feel great. It may feel comforting, like your self-concept can be based on big gym, but at the end of the day, you really want to feel good. You want to be able to get up out of your seat or buy one airline seat ticket. You want to feel freedom to go to the beach and just be in your bathing suit. When we are in our best physical form and health, there's nothing like it, because it's actually you being in your true divine essence and feeling that greatness and feeling that good. Not that you have to be a size two or looking like Hercules, but just that you want to feel and do your best, right? Feeling that sense of happiness and joy. There's nothing like putting energy into this space and area of life because it pays off the biggest in terms of your happiness and joy.
Absolutely. We had talked about the words that you have coined, Chubology and Grubology, and you've coined another one called gluttonectomy. What is a gluttonectomy?
Yeah, performing a gluttonectomy is looking at what we talked about already in the sense of, you know, getting out of us this sense of gluttony, the sense of like overeating that part of us and dealing with it. And we have to deal with it emotionally, like again, asking ourselves why it's there, letting go of being willing to do it, allowing ourselves to stop having a hunger meter, things of that nature. But we also need to look at it from a healing perspective in our inner child and where this gluttonectomy is coming from, that inner glutton. So that's what that is. We want to perform a gluttonectomy stat and really reduce and eliminate the behaviors of binge and overeating.
You share that there's a top predictor to weight and eating freedom that every diet and health book leaves out. What is that?
I'm so glad you asked, Victor. It is our body image. We got to look at how we feel about our body. If you are negatively evaluating your body, like for example, you criticize, like one of my Whole and Hebrew Health course participants was criticizing herself 21 times a day. She counted 21 body criticisms where she's just like, oh, my thighs are too big or my butt's too big or, you know, and I say people are worried about their own big butt, first of all, to worry about yours, but we got to get to a space of freedom and get out of body shame. So body shame and body negative evaluation, as it's called technically, is really going to cause you to overeat and eat poor choices because why? I feel bad about my body, so I'm going to eat what, quote unquote, bad food. There is really no such thing as a bad food. There are foods that are non-nutritious, but we project our badness onto the food. So this is why we need to get shame out. Shame, generally toxic shame, is when you feel that you're defective, that you're, you know, something's wrong with you and you're the problem and everything's your fault. That's toxic shame that has to be healed and worked through with therapy. But in different programs, but there is a sense of body shame too, that transfers to. And body shame is like this hard to reach place built in the deep attic. I mean, listen, writing a book like Chubby Church, people think you're calling the church fat. And I'm like, no, I'm the pastor. I had to be the Chubby Church member. I had to heal myself, you know? And, you know, you start judging yourself. Oh my gosh, well, is my body small enough or big enough, you know, to do this, right? You got to kind of work through all that. And body shame is exactly that. So it's when I started teaching on eating disorders was when I was at my heaviest, as somebody called, and I knew I was supposed to teach in this space. And this is way back in 2010. And so if someone said to me, you know, I want you to teach on the, we had a cancellation from the eating disorders teacher at the congregation. And she's like, would you do it? I'm like, oh my gosh, God. Oh yes. Yes, of course. But it was just the weirdest thing. And then over the time and years, I was telling people I'm going to write a book on Chubby Church because it was an inner transformation thing. It was an inner out matter, to work this issue out. And body shame is you allowing yourself to love yourself, you know, thinking to the body, like, what is my relationship? Do I love it? Do I thank it? Am I even grateful for all the things my organs and legs and feet are doing for me? You miss a finger, you'll see exactly how powerful that one finger is. So really being grateful, I really highly recommend in the shower and or in the bath to really take a moment and just thank God for every part of your body and whatever form it's in that you may have added to or enhanced it in your chubby choices. It's still at the core, a body that looks like it just walked out the Garden of Eden. You know, we just at the core, your body is still pretty amazing. It's just sometimes we protect it with what we're doing to it. But it's still something you want to be grateful for. So the body in the male and female form is absolutely magnificent and is worthy of appreciation. So as you accept the body, learn how to appreciate it, love it, trust it to work for you. Sometimes people's backs have been out or you've had childbirth issues. And so just learning how to trust it, learning how to really see it for what it is, like accept it, you know, accept your body since it's all you have. And yeah, we can get plastic surgery, but you know, those people sometimes really have problems or can get addicted to plastic surgery and trying to be a pleaser to everybody else in the world. Right now, it's just really learning how to accept what you do have and that it's good and you can work with it as well to put it in its best. So that's what is the number one predictor of eating issues, is actually how we feel about our body. So body image is very important and it affects men and women. And once you deal with this, it's pretty powerful for what you can do as far as your health choices.
And an extension of the golden rule, love thy neighbor as thyself, and also love thyself as thyself.
Yes, yes, yes.
My guest, Jendai Harris, her books, The Chubby Church, Book 1 and Book 2, and Whole and Free Health, Your Guide to a Healthy Weight and Happier You in Body, Soul, and Spirit. Jendai, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your books and find out more about you and your wonderful work.
Absolutely. And most people call me Jay, but it's jendaiharris.com, J-E-N-D-A-Y-I, Harris.com, J-E-N-D-A-Y-I, Harris.com. Or you can also reach me at www.thechubbychurch.com, www.thechubbychurch.com. And if you're interested in Holy Free Health, that'll be a link there too. So I would love to speak to your congregations. If you need support, you can definitely reach out and contact me on the website. Otherwise, my books are read on Amazon or Audible and Kindle.
Jendai, Jay, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your experience, your message, and your wisdom.
My pleasure. Thank you, Victor. You're just incredible. I love the show. I love your heart. And all you've gone through, you're really remarkable. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for joining us on Vox Novus. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.